We've been doing a lot of archiving and bringing up history and things like that. And we're always looking for volunteers to come on in and help us prep for that. So if you're interested, come on down the station and say hi.
Excellent. All right. Now, Tom, our guest of honor, please tell us, what exactly does an engineer at a radio station do?
Well, that's tough. There's a million things to do as an engineer, and it's hard to be one person. I found most of the time that I'm feeling a lot like a border collie. Like, squirrel. And I run around five studios daily and make sure that things are working and that button is pushed.
Yeah.
You know the button.
It's always that button.
It's right. That button.
It's that thing's plugged in, that button is pushed.
I also make sure that our operating logs are current and up to date, that our emergency alert system logs are all done. We make sure that our signal gets up to the tower every day, 24/7.
I have questions about that. First, with the logs, do you have to submit them to anyone, or do you just have to hold them in reserve waiting for someone to ask for them?
Yes. We do it on a weekly basis. They're stuffed into envelopes, and nobody comes for years and years and years, and then suddenly they come and say, where's all your papers?
For the last X number of years, please provide them.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're weekly.
And regarding the tower, obviously if the tower went down completely, people would start calling in because there's no signal. But if there were an intermittent issue at the tower, or maybe a signal, a loss of power, signal degradation, something like that, do you have any way of knowing it before listeners find out about it just via their radios?
No. Usually failures like that are catastrophic, and you're off the air and you are scrambling. It is a really weird feeling to be driving up to Council Crest. Your hands are on the wheel at 10 and 2 with a very tight grip. And get up there and get us back on the air as soon as possible. Yeah. Luckily, we've been discussing a lot of disaster preparedness, things that we could do so that we're prepared if anything big happens, like an earthquake and the bridges are out. And we're thinking along the lines of actually having a little low power on the roof here at the station so that if we do lose the link and the tower is not there, you know, it has a generator up there, but it runs on natural gas. So if there's an earthquake and the gas is gone, all of those stations are offline. So it's every station for himself. So yeah. We may be going out in our boo van or something like that. Or,
just yelling out the window.
If it's four-wheel drive, right, Tom?
Yeah, we'll make sure that the signal at least hits the core metro area.
So. It's important during those times, right? I mean, lots of folks in the community rely on getting information, first response, and so forth. So KBOO staying on the air is quite important.
Right. We're not just about entertainment. We also have one foot in the safety and health of our community. So we want to share as much information as we can. And it's not that we have a particular slant or bias. But we might be a little bit more in tune with some of the street level things, like where can people go, what power is up, you know, where are people meeting, what's working, and
yeah.
Stuff like that, you know. So,
how long have you been involved with KBOO?
I have been here for a very, very long time. I used to be a programmer in the middle of the night. Now I sleep in the middle of the night, or at least I try to do that. But for about 35 years, I was in the middle of the night with various shows. The Audio Frenzy was one of them. The Wiggle Room was another one where we would do sonic collages and basically do dream sequences for several hours in the middle of the night. As you know, the late night KBOO is a completely different animal than
yes.
your daytime program.
Yes, it is.
And that's a lot of fun. But I found that as I am the engineer, it's very difficult to stay up till 6 a.m. and then come into work the next morning.
Yeah, so were you engineering here at the station while you were doing the overnight shows?
Yes, I finally gave up my show, yeah. Someday I'll bring something back or we'll do some specials, especially with the 50th anniversary coming up.
Did you know that you wanted to get into radio engineering because of your programming work at KBOO, or did the two things just sort of happen simultaneously?
I think it was just a natural interest in it. And I remember a billion years ago, my dad and I making a crystal radio set, right? And crystal radio sets don't even get plugged in. You just get radio right out of thin air. And that was where the magic stepped in right there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of your father, Tom, Ernie Hood, he was a very well-known musician here in the Portland area and also a KBOO programmer for years. What kind of music did he play?
He played all sorts of stuff, but primarily he would go toward historic old Portland bands that are completely obscure recordings. Now they are in his archive, which I'm going through, and we're making an effort to digitize as much of this as we go toward the 50th anniversary. Ern was, in the early days, a guitarist, a zither player, brother of Bill Hood. Bill Hood was one of the Wrecking Crew in Los Angeles, had a 40-year career there. But my dad played with Charlie Barnett Orchestra and played with the Winging Manone and Lucky Thompson. For many years, he was active as a studio musician in Portland. His zither playing may be heard on Flora Purim's album, Butterfly Dreams, which was recorded in New York in 1973, and then Stories to Tell, I think it was a couple of years later. Unfortunately, the polio epidemic of that era put him in an iron lung for over a year and completely wiped out his performing career. Mm. So he had to hang up the guitar.
We were browsing through these treasures that you brought in during Palestine Today. And were these things that you found this weekend?
Some of these are things I found this weekend. I found this poster here that you can see on your radio. I'll hold this up to the microphone.
You can describe it verbally.
Yeah, it's actually a KBOO benefit from 1972. It's the Sunnyland Band with Upepo and John Adams. And it's original artwork. This was from the PSU Ballroom. Saturday, wow. March 31st, and you can get tickets at Music Millennium.
Something's never changed.
Yeah, something's never changed. This poster is pristine.
Yeah, it is great.
Found some other stuff here. Here's something. This is an old boy. You know that newspaper gets very yellow after about 70 years. This is from the Hotel Multnomah. It's Jack Bain and his rhythmical sweet swing music. And they used to play at the Hotel Multnomah Supper Club. They also used to play at Jack Bain's Tropics Club, which was downtown at 10th and Morrison.
So Jack Bain was based here in Portland then.
Right, and he would operate out of these hotels. And
Well, in fact, I believe we have some music from your father queued up to go. David, do you have it there? All right, here, let's take a listen.
From Jack Bain's Exotic Tropics Club at the corner of 10th and Yamhill in downtown Portland, it's the music of the Eddie Beach Trio. Eddie is at the piano and handles the vocals, backed up by Ernie Hood on guitar and Neil Alden on bass. Eddie and the boys get things started with Cherokee. Thank you.
That was excellent, and I suppose indicative of the style of music that he played during that era?
Sure. Yeah, well, a lot of it was kind of the Nat Cole Trio, kind of they were a knockoff of that, and boy, they were having fun in the day. Yeah, and my dad got hired on the bandstand at Jansen Beach Ballroom by Charlie Barnett himself when they were touring through Portland, and he packed up his things and went to L.A.
So in addition to the promotional material that you've got here, you also have some recordings with you. Did you find those here in the archives, or were those in your own
this
collection?
These ones were found Sunday. Portland State, this is another Portland State. This is a live KBOO remote. October 21st, 1972, with Sunnyland Band and Dr. Korn's Bluegrass Remedy.
And have you thrown those on the reel-to-reel to listen to them yet?
They are ready to be transferred.
Excellent. Another archival project.
Yes. Oh, there's a few.
So Tom, why were you not compelled to follow your father and uncle into musicianship?
They did everything they could to keep me away from doing that.
Really? It was just they did not think
they
that it was a good way to...
They did not think that the life of a musician, you know, why don't you go off and sell some insurance or something safe, you know? But it didn't work.
Well, yeah, not completely at least.
No, I've been playing since I was 15. I'm 65 now, so I think my guitar's in tune now.
It must be something for you to see all this, Tom, for you to find these treasures, as Kyle said. And just wondering, how do you plan to preserve and share this amazing historical memorabilia with the KBOO community and the greater Portland?
We're just going to digitize as much as possible. I have to say that working in the archives like that is very emotional. So I'm finding things that jog my memory from me being a kid and stuff. But it just is, it's something else. And I do want to make a special shout out to Selena, who is our archivist we've had for the last 10 months working on the archive project for KBOO as we go toward the 50th anniversary. We're trying to digitize as much, and Selena has shown us the way to properly archive this dated material and get all the metadata and the graphics in the proper stuff. So we're going to be loading up as much as possible. Abe Conway, our IT guy, has been working on a huge archive server, which is going into the server room. And this is going to be the depository of a lot of stuff that will be on demand. We'll be able to play it anywhere from any studio in here.
Have you also run across material from your old overnight shows?
I have a bunch of it. Luckily, my stuff is, the latter stuff is already digitized, so I'll be bringing that in and putting metadata in for that and adding it to the soup.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left, so unless you fellas have something that you want to chip in at the last moment, anything?
It was a really good track, the jazz track.
Yes, and in fact, we have another one. So
very high quality, too, you noticed.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's just like, there were like very like tasteful crackles, but it was still like, you can tell like...
It was period appropriate.
It felt like I was there.
Well, it was 1942.
Mm-hmm. That's good quality, I think.
Yeah, that's good quality.
What do you want?
Well, Tom, you mentioned that your father, you would go out and actually capture sounds from the environment and create these soundscapes. I think this is the next track we have, right?
Right. After the polio, he was not able to play guitars, so he fell in love with the zither, which is like an auto harp without buttons on it. And he could put it across his wheelchair on a board, and he would tune them for hours and hours, do multi-tracking with it. He would go out with various field recorders and drive. He was able to drive his Volvo around. And he would pick up the sound of children playing in playgrounds and frogs and storms and rain and all this. And it all got mixed together in one big, wonderful thing. So this track coming up is actually from a compilation that has never been released. And it's called Back to the Woodlands, Ern Hood. And this track is called Open Fields.
All right, we are pleased and privileged to present apparently the first broadcast of this track. David, do you have it queued up for us? All right, here we go. And all the listeners out there, have a wonderful rest of the week and weekend, and we will talk to you all again next Wednesday. Have a great night, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.